Okay, our next speaker is Chris Novak from the University of Saskatchewan. And after this,
nailed it.
Brad's gonna take over. Do Americans have trouble with that?
Yeah. Thanks. I'm sure it's just a coincidence, but I'll also be talking about oil sands reclamation. So this is a active tailing pond prior to reclamation, and this is actually the site that post-reclamation I'm studying. It's 500 acres, and do we have a pointer or are we using a mouse?
There's a pointer on the table there. This thing.
Gotcha. Thank you. So this is the mine. Or sorry, this is the pond, and here's another pond and another pond, and there's the plant and there's a tank farm. In 80 years, when this is all reclaimed, this landscape is going to be a mosaic of discrete but connected, hydrologically connected reclaimed areas. So what my group is looking at are kind of long-term ideas. All right, we're going to have all these different claimed areas, and water is going to go from here, and then it's going to go into here, and then go into here, and eventually make its way back into the Athabasca River. We need to have some way of projecting what is that water quality and water quantity going to look like prior to us building all of these reclaimed areas. So we should take one of these tailing ponds, and we should be able to develop a model of it, a surface hydrologic model that allows us to predict what is this water output going to look like. Where I come in, we're still in the early stages. I am characterizing the reclamation cover of one of those tailing ponds. And this is the process that Brad hit on quite a bit, actually. You start with the undisturbed area. You salvage as much of the fertile material as you can. Overburden's moved off. You obviously mine your oil sands. And then at the end, you're going to have to reclaim your overburden and your tailing ponds. You stabilize it. You add your reclamation material and plant vegetation. And hopefully, over time, it matures and end up with equivalent land capabilities. What I'm looking at is these peat mineral mixes that Brad spoke quite a bit about. And like he said, it is peat and mineral just mixed together, essentially. The mineral is fairly parent material, and then the peat helps kind of lift it up, gives it nutrients, gives it a lot of carbon. This is the study design. These three blue are my reclamation areas, all peat mineral mix. And I also have my burn site that Brad talked about. I think me and Brad had the same idea where there was like a very destructive fire right next to this reclaimed area, and we said, great, this is awesome, we can definitely study this. I won't be talking about the burned area very much. And then I have a well-structured, well-developed silty lobe reference soil of a highly productive forest area, undisturbed. And from each one of those, I am building moisture retention curves to characterize the soil and look at some different tools. This is the active tailing pond post-reclamation. What we did on this for sampling design is just simple linear transects. And at each one of these points, we did topsoil and subsoil, intact soil, of course. So before we talk about moisture retention curves too much, just kind of give you the soil physics 110 cliff notes on it. You have volumetric water content as a relationship against your matric potential, which is how strongly is that soil holding on to that water. At full saturation, this up here, these ellipses, think of it as like a soil cross-section, and then your circles are your pores. They're fully saturated up here, and then as some force acts on your soil, so gravity drainage or evapotranspiration is trying to pull water out, it's going to always pull from your largest pores first. Big pores, they don't hold on very strongly. And then as you get smaller pores, it comes tighter and tighter as it holds on to water. So you can see here, as your volumetric water content decreases, it's eventually these really small pores that hold on very tightly to your water. So because we know that pore size is a big determination of your retention factor, obviously different textures give you different relationships. This sand has these big pores, and that'll drop quite quickly with not very much effort, while the clay is really going to hold on to it. And you see, you, for the most part, get these real nice sigmoid S curves as a relationship. to measure that, we took our intact soil cores and we expose it to a environment relating to a match potential. So a tension table, you're trying to pull that water out, you set your tension, and then you leave it, let it equal, reach equilibrium in terms of water content, and then you measure that and go down, and you build this curve. Eventually use a pressure plate, which just use pressure. You're just trying to push the water out, and you have to destruct cores, and there's a couple different steps. And at the end, you get this as your raw data. So this is topsoil and then subsoil, and your water content, your match potential, and then your five different sites at 10 different tensions. And you can glean some cool stuff from this, but I think what we want to focus on is this is a relationship that you can plug into a larger model. You need to have a relationship in between these two points. You need to essentially fit a curve to this raw data. So to do that, we use these soil hydraulic models. And all that is a way of graphically showing how does this data relate to a curve. And these are five of popular ones that I fit to the data. This is a lot of data for a fairly small screen. So let's just focus on this one. So this is one of my reclamation areas. And if you look at the topsoil here, a couple of my hydraulic models aren't doing a great job of really capturing this relationship. They're missing it high up here, and they're missing it missing it down here as well, missing it low. It's not great. So why is this? Why is this happening? I probably shouldn't have put bimodal in the title if I wanted narrative tension, but yeah, these are what a bimodal retention curve looks like. So instead of that nice S shape that you saw with our texture classes and you see in the subsoil, you kind of get these two humps. And the unimodal models can't capture that. They don't really know how to deal with that extra variation, while these bimodal ones are specifically built for these type of soils can capture that. What's interesting about that is you don't see a lot of bimodal retention characteristics in soils. You only tend to see them in these really well-developed silty loams that you see, for example, here. And this is the reason that these models were built at all, which is pretty interesting, of why is this 3-year-old reclaimed soil behaving like a 5,000-year-old well-developed forest soil? And this is the theory that we're working with right now, is that in these natural soils, you have a lot of aggregation. So you have two distinct pore classes, what it's come down to. You have your big macro pores in your voids between your aggregates, and then you have your smaller micro pores within your aggregates. So that's why you get that first big drop when those macro pores are emptying, and then it kind of levels out, and that second big drop when your micro pores within your aggregates are emptying out. What's different with the reclaimed soil is that you don't have a lot of aggregation. The soil's too young. It hasn't had time for those soil-forming factors to work on it. So you have these macro pores that come from the plant material within the peat. The peat, a lot of it still has that plant shape where you'll have big macro pores. So you have that big dip, and then your second big dip is coming from micro pores within it, but also from the plant physiology of the peat component. As you get closer and closer to that permanent wilting point, your matrix potential in your soil overcomes matrix potential inside of your plant material. So even though you're getting the same result, it's kind of coming at it from two different pathways. And if we look back here at all of our different ones, all of our reclaimed topsoils have this bimodal shape. You see it missing quite a bit at different areas, but so does our reference area, which sure enough is a well-developed silty loam topsoil that's been alluviated. So we have a lot of platy structure. So this is a really interesting case of 3-year-old soil from a reclaimed area behaving like a highly productive, natural, undisturbed soil. And the last point I just wanted to make here was that this Van Genuchten soil hydraulic model, this is the foundation of almost all retention curves. Any sort of larger model that uses retention properties has this model built within it, and it doesn't do a very good job in terms of representing these topsoils. So the summary of this would be the topsoils of our reclaimed peat mineral mixes and our productive forest soils have similar moisture retention capabilities, even though they're doing it by sort of different mechanisms. And that when we scale up these models, so we could go to a watershed scale or we go to a regional scale, maybe we need to account for the fact that there may be bimodalism within your soil retention properties. And that may, depending on the resolution of your larger model, improve your results and remove some error. And any questions? My supervisor went to Florida, so this is just brownie points.
We got a couple minutes for questions here.
So I apologize, I missed the first part. What kind of depth are we talking about on these rebate soils?
So the soil itself is usually about 50 centimeters, so half a meter, and that bimodalism is happening probably in the top 15 centimeters. Yeah. So again, it really comes up to the resolution of your model that you want to use. Like if that's gonna, if bimodalism in the top 15 is gonna have any effect, it'd have to be a pretty finely tuned model. Because as I saw, the subsoil is unimodal; it's pretty standard.
You took your cores across the tailing basin, and it's like
right.
Yeah. If you worked with iron mine tailings, there was a decided gradient where the water comes in and water slows down in the sand, and then at the far end of the basin, there was almost, you know, very, very fine textured material. So there was a very definite gradient depending where the water in the tailings came in.
Right.
Are you having that there, or is the water coming in so fast that it's pretty uniform across your basin?
Oh, there we go. So, yeah, actually, this area in the middle is mature fine tailings. That's your fines that came into the tailing ponds. And this is still under active reclamation. It hasn't dewatered all the way yet. All of this around it is fairly coarse medium sand, so that dewatered fairly quickly.
How does the water come into that? Is it like a river coming in?
When it was still active? When it was still an active tailing pond?
Oh, it's still, okay.
Yeah. No, it isn't.
That's what he's asking.
Oh, when it was active.
Yeah, how did they put the water in? Pipe?
Yeah, it was piped in. The plant's right here, so they piped it in, and then some in here as well, when it was still going.
I've got time for one more.
Sorry.
I have a question from a British soil scientist, who was actually originally from Brad. He ran out of time, so I had a few tricks. Excellent talk. He answered all my questions. I'd be remiss if I didn't ask people what can do with soil. So it's my understanding, what it means to the soil classification, all due respect to the U.S., so many friends in the room, it's not official to make immediate systems. My understanding that Alberta friends are trying to tend to classify some of these claimed soils.
Correct.
In your opinion, going forward, is it doable for too much variability, heterogeneity, however you want to tell shit, and more than one site to do a good job?
Yeah, I mean, there is so much variability just even within oil sands reclamation. Like Brad was saying, there's these peat mineral mixes, and then there's your forest floor layers. I think you could. Like, there's no problem attaching designations to it. It wouldn't be at the same, not to use the word again, resolution as your natural soils, where you can really get onto the nitty-gritty of it all, right? I think here you'd have to kind of play in a bigger space.
All right, thanks very much.